So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
One legendary voice has welcomed millions of fans to the WWE on Monday nights for over a decade.
We are live in New York City, and this is Monday Night Raw.
You hear Jim Ross, you know you've got it on the right channel. You're watching the right program.
Thank you so much, folks, for inviting us into your homes.
Jim is like the John Madden of WWE.
Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler with you live.
Well, of course, we all know that good old JR has his own signature catchphrases.
Shawn Michaels is getting whipped like a government mule.
And he's running like a scalded dog. Good God Almighty.
Look at the carnage.
He's stomping them all, walking a drive.
I like when Jim Ross says
business is about to pick up here.
One of the all-time classics has got to be there.
It's going to be a slobber knocker.
Slobber knocker.
Let the sports historians have the Giants win the pennant. I will take God as my witness.
He is broken in half.
As the greatest sports call ever made.
There is no one in the history of wrestling that's been able to call a big-time main event match like Jim Ross.
And folks, this is what our business is all about.
He just has that ability to connect with our fans.
JR makes you hurt, makes you cry, makes you yell.
You can tell that everything he says truly comes from his heart.
There's nobody that I would rather have call in my match than Jim Ross.
You feel his passion for this business.
The passion comes through because it's genuine.
Where else can you feel this and be a part of something this special?
His voice is plastered on so many great moments over the years.
You can feel his emotion and you get caught up in his emotion.
Cena has walked through hell.
He can't contain it.
The show-stopping spirit of Shawn Michaels lives.
He's got an amazing gift.
A lot of people are good, but very few people get great. He's great.
Him doing announcing is what he was put on earth for.
God, I love this job!
I've often heard Jim say, you know, well, Gordon Solie was the best. And I'll look Jim Ross right in the eye and tell him you're as good as Gordon Solie ever was.
But there's just nobody better than Jim Ross.
Austin is the champion! Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
He's the best ever. End of story.
Ladies and gentlemen, the newest member into the WWE Hall of Fame, good old JR, Jim Ross!
Welcome to Review Away, brought to you by Wei Ting and John Pollock, our longest-running sponsors of this particular program.
I do. I sponsor my time, I suppose.
Yeah?
How much? Yeah. I guess that counts.
You've got a new look in your new year, your new age, Wei.
Are you?
What is this? A Gracie hoodie and your green fantasy hat. You're not nothing new at the age of 32.
When was the last time you had a wardrobe change?
Oh, it's been a long time. I don't make too many big adjustments.
No, me neither. I don't enjoy clothes shopping.
I hate it. I can only do it maybe once a year.
Yeah, I'll do it if I go on vacation.
Oh, really?
Just feel because it just kind of I do have the extra time, and it also feels like if I never. If I don't buy this shirt now, I'll never come back to this place to buy it. So it gives me a bit of incentive. But otherwise, I'll never go clothes shopping.
I hate the process of it, trying stuff on. Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah.
Hate it.
We should all be just like Steve Jobs.
You know? I think everyone should have that exact same philosophy. Yeah. I mean, you have your look. You have adopted that look. That's what I think of now. I have an image of you.
Sure, perhaps, but I would I feel like I wouldn't want to dress like this when I'm 40. You know what I mean?
Oh, you evolve over time.
Yeah.
But this is your 31, 32 look.
But like black Steve Jobs, black turtleneck, blue jeans. You could really wear that at any age.
Was that consistent throughout his whole... Or maybe was that more in the later years when he came back to Apple?
Probably more towards the later years.
That's what I associate with it. Yes.
But I feel like even like an 8-year-old can rock that and be acceptable.
That's true.
All the way till 90.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. Did you do anything? I was going to say, did you do anything for your birthday? I know exactly what you did for your birthday on Monday. It required a lot of wrestling and a lot of talking. Any regrets?
No, it was great. It was fun. What an awesome episode of Raw.
Yeah, there a lot happened on Raw.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot
of returns.
Well, it's the big full-on push now for WrestleMania.
No, I had a great time.
Yes.
Fantastic, I think.
I think.
Yeah.
You have to go back and listen to
it.
Yeah. See how you... Do you ever go back and listen to our shows, ever?
Sometimes, if I feel like the show went really well, I might, you know, put it on. And if also there's nothing else to listen to, I'll, like, put it on probably that night. But never, like, you know, a week later. I never go back and listen to, like, our archives. Never.
Which are available.
Yeah.
Those out there.
I can't really stand the sound of my voice.
It's a hard thing to get over. I think I'm just now trying to get to that point where I can go back and listen to myself, because I do find when I listen to myself, I pick up a lot in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. things that I could do better.
Yeah.
Listening to yourself critically, you're going to be the most critical of yourself, I feel. So it is good to go back and listen to yourself, but it's very hard to do. Because you sound like you're, God, who would possibly want to hear this?
But you're absolutely right. I think that anytime I do go back and listen, I'll pick on myself and I'll beat on myself.
Well, what you do in your private time.
While listening to myself, yes.
You're always paranoid that maybe you're being too critical of yourself. But then you see that there's graphs being designed for those same issues that you have.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. There are people making graphs documenting all the instances of right now, which are it's pretty much at a zero for you now.
We'll find out. I want to see how that graph progresses.
Yeah.
There's probably a wild graph to be made now about something I'm doing.
Mm.
Who knows?
Mm. Interesting. Maybe. You know what it would be? It would be the instances of your sound mail message.
Which is off.
Coming on.
Yep. The volume is off.
Good.
Okay. It's only because I've had to get Outlook. It's so annoying. I guess I could disable the sound. You're right.
Yeah.
Though I just haven't... where do I even go to do that?
Preferences?
In Outlook,
there
isn't a preferences.
I'm a Mac guy. I have no idea.
Well, I know that this is a very easy fix somewhere, but not one that I'm going to do here.
Great radio
on the air. Well, way we are now moving from
WrestleMania 12.
WrestleMania 12 was what we did. 1996. Yeah. We are jumping ahead 11 years to 2007. I could not remember for the life of me what we had just spent 3 weeks discussing. What a forgettable year 1996 was.
Wow. You've also watched a lot of wrestling in the time since.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Especially in those particular 11 years, a lot went down. Today we start our discussion of WrestleMania 23. We're going to be reviewing the Go Home episode of Raw. And I did get some complaints, Way, stating that why aren't you reviewing SmackDown as well. And I'm going to tell everybody why we are not reviewing SmackDown, because I looked up at this point, yes, we did have the brand split. However, we had also, in 2007, they started at the prior No Way Out pay-per-view where both brands would be represented on the pay-per-views. They were getting away from brand-specific shows because they really weren't doing all that well. And as you can see on this episode of Raw, every major player for WrestleMania was on Raw, regardless of their brand.
Yeah. The only omission seemed like the ECW guys.
Yes. The ECW match and Benoit and MVP. So I guess they were, Benoit was eliminated in foresight rather than hindsight on this particular Raw. But here is what we're missing, okay, Way, by not going back to review the final SmackDown going into WrestleMania 23, okay? We had Matt Hardy and the Great Khali fight to a no contest. Finlay defeated Mr. Kennedy. MVP defeated Vico Batamango in a minute 31.
Who's that?
Probably a local enhancement talent who was given the great name Vico Batamango. Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton had a 12.5-minute match, which Jeff Hardy prevailed in. This is the one that you're really going to get mad at me for not insisting we did SmackDown 2. Ashley, Candice, Maria, Mickey, and Tori defeated the fivesome of Jillian Hall, Crystal Marshall, Melina, Victoria, and Michelle McCool. And SmackDown ended with CM Punk defeating King Booker.
Well, I'll have to go back on my own time.
From the Grand Rapids, Michigan. So
I mean, why were those same people complaining that we weren't watching reviewing ECW from that week as well?
Not one complaint about that. And apparently ECW was probably the bigger show because Vince McMahon was on ECW and cut a big promo. And was going to be involved more with... He was involved more with ECW at this point because this was when Wrestling Society X had debuted on MTV on Tuesday nights going against ECW, and they beefed it up by putting more Vince McMahon onto ECW and putting more emphasis on that show because this was after Heyman had left and ECW was being written by David Lagana, and they had just added Dusty Rhodes as well to the ECW team. So that's how things were paired off as such with the ECW roster of 2007. We have later on the show, by the way, before I forget, we will hear from Jim Ross discussing a very memorable segment on this particular edition of Raw from the Allstate Arena in Chicago, Illinois, which had hosted the prior year's WrestleMania that you and I attended, WrestleMania 22.
Yeah. The Allstate Arena, the arena that every wrestler looks forward to wrestling in.
Yeah, this arena that just will never crumble.
Yeah.
This has to be one of the older arenas that the WWF runs, because this was the Rosemont Horizon prior.
Right. But in interviews, you always hear about professional wrestlers talking about how much they love wrestling here, and whether it's due to the crowd or, I suppose, the acoustics of the place, there must be something about it.
Yes. Was there anything memorable you recall from attending a show there?
No. It was far away.
It's a pretty loud crowd, I thought.
It was also WrestleMania.
It was WrestleMania. They had that going for it.
Yeah. I think you might have to be inside the ring to really appreciate it. So,
do you ever hear an event and there's just one image that hits you? Like when I say WrestleMania 22, what's the first thing you think of?
Actually, what I think about, like the visual? A visual or...
Like I find when someone throws a event at me,
yeah,
there's something you automatically think of instantly before you even put any thought into it.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I think of for that event. It's not even necessary. I don't even remember. I do remember the main event now.
Because that's what I remember. I remember Triple H's entrance. That is the He-Man entrance.
I actually more think about like the banners across the,
that's
the
right,
top of
they
the
had
arena.
Those.
I remember seeing those. I think about that. But yeah, it was the He-Man entrance. Was it He-Man or Conan?
Conan. It was more Conan.
Yeah.
Though it's I think He-Man. I mean, Conan and He-Man are basically cousins. With CM Punk, you're right, his WrestleMania debut.
Yeah.
And here he was a year later,
mm-hmm.
involved in a match at WrestleMania, coming back to Chicago. So we will hear from Jim Ross later today discussing his big moment on this show. And this was March the 26th of 2007, which is notable because it was 6 years to the day of the final episode of Monday Nitro on March the 26th. And I can say that 6 years later, the wrestling industry had drastically changed. This was also the Papa Roach era of the Raw opening. What a tune.
Whoa. Is that
yes.
It? Yeah. Nice.
I never give up.
Yeah.
Papa Roach.
Yeah. What was on the SmackDown side?
Oh, at this time, I couldn't.
It doesn't matter. This was before the Nickelback era.
Yes. Batista and The Undertaker will be taking on John Cena and Shawn Michaels, they announced in the main event, and Vince McMahon against Bobby Lashley on television.
Big match.
It is.
DQ.
I feel over the next 2 weeks, there's a great discussion to be had regarding the decision to go with Bobby Lashley and Umaga as the WrestleMania match.
Okay.
and Bobby Lashley and Vince McMahon, the non-wrestler, as the setup for the match at WrestleMania.
Well, tell me. Why don't we have that discussion now?
What would you have thought had they had done Vince McMahon and Bobby Lashley as the WrestleMania match? Donald Trump is still representing, Lashley is still representing him, but Vince's hair is on the line, and it's Vince in the ring having the match.
I think it's on the marquee. It's very attractive. Might be even more attractive, you know, than having Umaga there. But I'm imagining they thought that the match wouldn't have been that good. Similar to this year with Shane McMahon.
I'm not even saying I do believe Vince and Lashley would be a much worse match than Shane McMahon and The Undertaker, because I think you can allow for a lot more creative spots with Shane and Taker that Vince and Lashley would not be pulling off. But the thinking was sound that Vince and Donald Trump are essentially the draw.
Yeah.
But they don't need to wrestle here, so let's involve two people that hopefully can get something out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are the ones coming out of WrestleMania that we want to benefit from the name value that Vince and Trump are already bringing.
Yes.
So I think that part was kind of interesting. And watching the match here, I think we can all say that they probably did make the right decision. Jonathan Coachman is in the ring to start off the show, Mr. ESPN, and says that the match involving Lashley and Vince McMahon later tonight is now a no disqualification match, and that there will be no unauthorized run-ins, because if there are, they will result in a fine or a suspension. And that leads to Steve Austin coming out with a t-shirt that read, "Arrive, raise hell, leave," proving that anything that this guy wore, people would buy. Arrive, raise hell, leave. There was also a sign in the crowd that read, "Austin for president," which was, isn't that a interesting sign? I mean,
it is.
Given the political climate today and who was involved in that match at WrestleMania 23.
Not that far of a stretch.
Not at all. Anyway, Austin goes through this story with the what routine. He talks about getting a letter from Donald Trump in his mail trying to buy him off, but then finds out through some investigative work that it was actually Vince McMahon that sent him this letter, making Austin upset and trying to get him upset at Donald Trump. Then Coach admits to sending all the bribes, and Vince had nothing to do with it, and apologizes to him. And Austin then refers to Umaga as Omaga and explains how he's going to officiate this match, including threatening to rake him in the eye if he won't break on the count of five. And Coach is not sure why this hair stipulation is such a big deal, because both of them are bald and it's beautiful. Austin stuns Coach. Crowd was very hot for this, as Austin just drank his beers. He arrived, he raised some hell, and then he left. And I'll say it was, the crowd loved this.
Yeah.
I can't say, I got all of that much out of it, other than people wanted to see Steve Austin.
Exactly. Keep in mind that, you know, I imagine an Austin appearance at this time was pretty rare. So for this live crowd in Chicago to see Steve Austin just appear, and I thought Austin did a great job. I thought even just as a special referee, he brought so much personality into this feud, this match, and I thought he basically carried this segment alone to raise its overall interest.
So Austin is then, after the break, walking backstage, and he takes off in his big truck, but a limo is approaching into the arena and blocks his truck. And it's Vince McMahon inside of the limo, who just gets all upset until he realizes that it's Austin in the truck. Austin gives him the middle finger and then drives off, and Vince pulls his limo driver out and beats the shit out of this limo driver. This is one of the McMahon limo drivers that will not be inducted into the Hall of Fame, like James Dudley. And this poor limo driver, this was probably the last we ever saw of this guy.
Who's the guy?
James Dudley was inducted into the WWF Hall of Fame years and years ago, like in the 90s, and he was Vince McMahon Sr.'s limo driver.
And that was enough justification?
That was, I think, where everyone realized the bar of the WWF Hall of Fame and where it is. He was a close family friend and someone that they wanted to honor. James Dudley.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
The original Dudley.
Yeah, from Dudleyville. This was just funny. Like, I mean, you don't see Vince get too physical these days, but to see the Mr. McMahon character in full effect here, doing something that just...
Oh, he had a lot of fun, you could tell, during this whole Donald Trump storyline and getting to cut his crazy promos. He was very good throughout this.
To see Vince McMahon just, like, reach into a car and drag a man out and start beating up on this other man, it's hilarious to watch.
I wonder if we'll get to that point during this build. Maybe Shane's leaving the arena and he's in a limo and Vince takes it out on Shane's limo.
I don't know.
Driver.
I wonder if Vince could still.
Yeah, I don't know. This was a different Vince in 2007 than there is in 2016. This was also WrestleMania and the All Grown Up campaign where they cast all of the talent with children playing the talent. And this first one featured a young Edge attending WrestleMania 6 at the Sky Dome and dressed all up as the rated R superstar with a leather jacket, a toque. Did you like these ads at the time looking back?
I love these. I thought they were
the best one was great. Still to come with the Divas.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I like any time you have little kids dress up as adults. Like, one of my favorite rap videos of all time is this Biggie Smalls video directed by Spike Jonze called Sky's the Limit, where they have, like, kids dress up as, you know, the whole Bad Boy crew. And this was kind of, you know, a similar tone. And I thought these were great. What did you think about the All Grown Up tag?
I didn't really know what it meant.
Well, it's 23. 23.
Yeah, that's not an age, though, you associate with.
You think 18 should have been all grown up?
18 or 21 maybe was the year to do it.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, once WrestleMania is of a legal voting or drinking age.
Yeah.
23 is...
23, though, is a pretty... You're definitely an adult by that time.
Yeah. We'll get into it more next week with the WrestleMania review, because originally they were very much going to try and make this WrestleMania... I think very much attach it to WrestleMania 3 because of where it was taking place at Ford Field, and even trying to have Hulk Hogan be a part of the show. And they would bring Aretha Franklin back. But I think that was probably some kind of the tie-in that they were looking for of comparing it to that generation to this one.
Yeah, I don't know if you could have done an all-grown-up ad with Hulk Hogan, who was probably – he was in the first one. He was, you know. He would have been 30. Like, now he's 50.
He's all grown up. He's kept growing. So, our first match of the night featured the women. Melina, Victoria, and Jillian Hall against Candice Michelle, Tori Wilson, and Ashley Massaro, who were all Playboy cover girls. So they showed the covers of Candice, Tori, and Ashley, with Ashley in that year's Playboy. So... that was always for the women. You got the Playboy cover, which typically also meant you got a match at WrestleMania. So you got a double payoff. Melina is facing Ashley Massaro in a Lumberjill match, they have announced now, at WrestleMania 23. I want to take a moment to just remember the god-awful theme song that Ashley Massaro would come out to at this time.
Beautiful.
Ugh, this was terrible music. Just terrible. Candice hit this spinning heel kick to Victoria, and the camera cut away before they could show the contact or lack thereof. They attacked Candice in their corner, and Jillian did a handstand into a leg drop and then missed. Finally makes the hot tag to Ashley, who comes in. She hit a tilt-a-whirl head scissors. Hurricane Rana to Victoria, and then there's another handspring back elbow by Jillian into Ashley's elbow, who gets onto her shoulders and uses a victory roll to pin Jillian at 3 minutes and 23 seconds.
A victory roll where Ashley basically pile drove herself into the ground.
It's the risk and reward of the victory roll.
So, you know, I mean, it was certainly still the Playboy model era. Not a great match, but I thought the crowd was really into it. And, you know, despite it not being a very great technical match, I thought this match served its purpose as sort of really like the cheerleader portion of the show.
Yeah, the women's division at this point, this was after Trish Stratus had left the prior fall. Lita had also left, and this was sort of the era where, you know, you had a lot of, you did have some women that were actually could go, yeah. But they were very, very few and far between, and it was...
And they weren't the ones being pushed.
No, not at all.
The ones being pushed were the Playboy girls.
Yes. There was a video package on the entire Vince McMahon-Donald Trump feud with the representatives announced the prior month, and Donald Trump, when he made his announcement, calling him the great Bobby Lashley. I feel that over the next couple of months, we are going to see so many clips of this build-up and Donald Trump on WWE being used without any context on various news shows and...
Possible. But I hardly think, though, this might be the only embarrassing footage of Donald Trump out there.
No, not even to be embarrassing, but... The Donald Trump character and putting him in a wrestling environment, it's just going to be so easy to editorialize something Trump does and showing him just taking the worst stunner in history from Austin. And all it'll require is a CNN producer to pick up a copy of this and WrestleMania 23, and they'll have B-roll for months as long as he's in the race. Then we had CM Punk, who came out to an extremely loud reaction, introduced as Chicago's own CM Punk, and, man, tons of CM Punk chants on Raw.
Yeah.
How little has changed over 9 years.
Do you think had he appeared in Chicago prior, as part of the WWE prior to this?
He would have been, I mean, he came up to the main roster the prior June, so they would have run Chicago. Mm-hmm. But this was certainly a big reaction for him. Mm-hmm. And at a time when, I mean, he certainly was pushed at the onset when he was brought up to ECW. And at this point, I mean, he was involved in the Money in the Bank ladder match, but was kind of at a certain point where you didn't really know where this guy was going. When Heyman left, there was the thoughts that this guy is going to be just cast aside. And 2007 was a very strange year for Punk.
If you can kind of equate his placement on this card and this roster at the time to somebody today, who would you say?
Perhaps a Kevin Owens level. I mean, he got, you know, he was a semi-pushed guy, especially on ECW, but I wouldn't say he felt like the massive focal point that he would later become.
And the future didn't, I mean, while the future looked bright, it wasn't necessarily...
There was a big push for him. I mean, the December to Dismember show, I mean, that was one of the big arguments was Heyman was pushing for Punk to win the title. They went with Lashley. And then after Heyman left, Punk was kind of in limbo at this point in time. And it was also at the Survivor Series the prior year when you got that big reaction to Punk when he was in the ring with DX. And that was at a time when I don't think that reaction was necessarily an expected one. And there was clearly a lot of groundswell for Punk. And going into Money in the Bank, I think that was, you know, where are they with this guy? Because he made a lot of sense to be the guy to win that match that year at WrestleMania. And this reaction, I think, proved that there was an audience for him. But Punk, as well, I think, created a lot of issues for himself just with his own demeanor. And taking on Kenny Dykstra, who is an unfortunate footnote in WWE history. This guy was pegged to be a can't-miss prospect in OVW and then was saddled with the Spirit Squad gimmick. This was after the Spirit Squad had been sent literally back to OVW by DX, and then he was repackaged as Kenny Dykstra, a playoff of Lenny Dykstra of the Philadelphia Phillies. Great. And surprisingly, Kenny Dykstra really, I guess, was a strikeout.
Did he have a gimmick even?
No, he didn't. He was a wrestler with a headband.
Yeah, okay. Not to say you always need a gimmick, but...
I remember interviewing Randy Orton, and he said that at that time, in 2005 this would have been, he said, Ken Doan is further ahead than I was at that stage of the game when Doan was still in OVW. And there were many people that were very high on this particular guy. And unfortunately, he just never realized any of that. And it's unfortunate because he got called up to the main roster. I think he was 21. Wow. So super young. Dykstra attacks Punk as soon as he enters. There's a double underhook into a backbreaker by Punk. Very loud CM Punk chants. And the announcers explain that Dykstra's motivation is that he's upset that he's not part of WrestleMania. That's what he's upset about. And Ross notes that Dykstra is 21. And so I guess he would have been 20 when he got called up to the main roster. And then Ross just says, and I would guess that Punk isn't much older than him. Punk being 30 at this time. Punk makes a comeback with a running knee, bulldog, and then hits the GTS for the win in 357. Very strong reaction on this show, and I wonder if they anticipated it, but it was noteworthy that he was introduced as Chicago's own, so they certainly played to that and didn't. Sometimes they get weird about guys in their hometown and not trying to make a big enough deal about it. But
well, this crowd certainly would have known anyway, even if they didn't point it out on in the commentary. You know, this was kind of CM Punk wrestling here as a bit of a generic, hopeful babyface with far less attitude or edge, I'd say. He also did the go to sleep here, which JR calls the fireman's carry to a knee to the face.
It's more technical breakdown.
Yeah. He also bloodied his mouth, Punk did here, and I didn't see where, but.
Well, Kenny was working with extra anger for this one, not being involved. Edge appears on the Titantron dressed up as 2007 with his shades, a jacket with an Affliction t-shirt underneath. A real dirtbag look.
Certainly. But I think babyfaces were wearing Affliction too.
Oh, this was at the height of that.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this day for, I mean, it's come, it's been around for a long time.
To mock this look?
Certainly, even back, like, around that time, I think so many of us were just waiting for the time when we can look back at old footage from around 2007 and laugh at how ugly these shirts were. And we can watch shows like this and enjoy that.
Well, it suits the Edge character going back. I mean, playing that was his role. He played this dirtbag. And he invites Punk to be part of the Cutting Edge segment later tonight involving all eight members of the Money in the Bank ladder match. So that is the next segment, and Edge comes out last for his own segment, joining the participants. Punk, Finlay, Randy Orton, Booker T., Matt Hardy, Mr. Kennedy, and Jeff Hardy. And there were so many different plans that were changed for WrestleMania 23, largely affected by Triple H's injury at the New Year's Revolution show in January, where he tore a tendon in his quad and was out because Hunter was going to be headlining WrestleMania. So when that...
Against
Cena. They were going to do a rematch from 2006. So when that fell apart, so much changed, and at one point they were talking about possibly putting Edge and Orton into a three-way with Cena. They were talking about many different versions of that WrestleMania card, and a lot of guys ended up not getting those planned matches, and they ended up in this match. There was a big match planned for Booker, Orton, Edge, but what you did get was a pretty stacked lineup for a Money in the Bank ladder match. I mean, this is one of the more deeper, I think, lineups that they've had for a Money in the Bank match.
Definitely. And all participants with very strong characters and personalities.
Yeah, you had a lot of contrasting personalities. And these segments are often very tough to pull off because we had Edge hosting it. And Edge was very good in this role. And he notes how he won the very first Money in the Bank ladder match and went on to become the WWE champion. Also noting he has won ladder matches at WrestleManias 16, 17, and 21, and says he is shocked that Matt Hardy is even on WrestleMania. And Matt responds saying, I'm going to be in your face, and is going to leave him flat on his back, just like your ex-girlfriend, Edge.
Ooh.
Which was also Matt's ex-girlfriend, as is well documented. And then Edge says that he hopes Booker has something intelligent to say. And Booker says that none of you have reigned supreme as King Booker and refers to all of them as lowly peasants.
It's always a very pleasant surprise to watch one of these shows and hear King Booker in full King Booker mode. And it's just funny hearing this man's, what I'm assuming is his interpretation of medieval English.
Yes. That was always the charm of his promos at the time.
It's amazing.
Finley takes exception to the term peasants and calls all of this verbal diarrhea and compares everyone to old women before he disses Edge and calls him Chisel Chin. And the crowd then pops when Orton takes the mic away. Orton says how Edge has ducked out of every match over the past month. And then Kennedy tries to get in a few words, and Edge cuts him off, saying, "Riveting stuff. Repeat your name." Then Edge mocks Jeff Hardy's poses, and Jeff says he's going to steal the show, even if it means going through my own brother. And he goes to point to Matt, but Kennedy is blocking him. So Kennedy has to move so Jeff can point to Matt. It was just some great blocking here in the ring. And then Edge takes the mic away. There was a big CM Punk chant. Edge says how his addictions are sex, violence, and championship gold. And Punk says, "Your addiction is running your mouth." And then they all brawl as Edge then takes off and watches everyone fight in the ring. And it ends with Punk and the Hardys in the ring, sending everyone out of the ring, and then they chase Edge to the back.
I like the segment a lot. I thought it did its job in telling you who was all in the match. We heard from everybody. I thought everybody, like I said, had very strong personalities in this match, and we kind of got a taste of all of them. I'd say the weakest sounding was probably Jeff Hardy. And, you know, that might be surprising considering how successful he was. But I thought everybody sounded great. I thought there were some very good lines here in this segment as well.
Then Maria's backstage with John Cena. And she asks, this was when she was doing the ditzy character, and asks, what will happen at WrestleMania? And what followed was the promo that, to me, covers all of the ground of John Cena, both good and bad, as a promo.
Sure.
We got everything here.
I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen at WrestleMania. Listen up, this is kind of complicated, so stay with me. WrestleMania is going to be a magical place where ladders lead to suitcases filled with gold. Maria, everybody's going to be there. Check this out. Playboy bunnies, vampires, sandmen, wolverines, animals, a Samoan bulldozer, a big Indian giant, a big red machine, the Queen of Soul. And Michael Cole. Who the hell keeps inviting Michael Cole? Anyway, we're going to have legends, legend killers. We got a rattlesnake, a dead man, enough explosives to end the war on terror, and billionaires. One of them is going to be bald as a baby's ass.
Goes into this long description of all the wacky and wild characters that will be at WrestleMania this Sunday. And that the final thing of the night will be the most controversial, intense, and charismatic individuals of all time, referring to John Cena and Shawn Michaels, who will step into the ring. And this will be a war that will be talked about for years. And that Maria is going to reminisce about this match as an old woman eating a Spam sandwich with her boobs hanging down. And it ends with John Cena ending with a strong finish and then dropping the mic, which is always a very cringy act. But nonetheless, this was a John Cena promo. Yeah. For whatever you love or hate about his promos, it was all captured in this 3 minutes.
It started off really bad. It started off like
painfully prepared.
And just the style of comedy that he tried to employ. It's as if I think he'd be a really great third grade teacher, you know? Like, he'd be the third grade teacher that you all remember because he was so funny in class. Oh, Mr. Cena. We love him. He's so funny. But trying to watch it at any age beyond 8 is a little tough because he's so corny. But I thought he closed off strong.
John Cena, I think both the appeal and the disdain, a lot of it is that he's that classic jock that you, if he can laugh at himself, it becomes very charming. But when he tries to be funny, you realize he's not all that funny. And you really have to be giving him the benefit of the doubt to be funny. But as a promo, I've always thought he's extremely good. And when you've seen comparisons, what Roman Reigns is going through now, I think you appreciate John Cena a lot more. Definitely. But when he goes too far and there's a magic line that he will cross trying to be too funny, it's the jock humor that just is, it can be very painful.
But I think, again, we have to ask, who's he making these jokes for? You know, is he trying to make it for his audience of children who are buying his clothes?
I think that argument about playing to children, I think sometimes we very much downgrade children's tastes. That just because something sucks and is lame, that children eat this stuff up. And certainly, there's going to be some that love this stuff.
How do we know it was lame, though? How do you know? What makes you think it was lame?
I feel that...
You and I obviously think it's lame, but...
I feel if you were to talk to a 12-year-old, I think they would reflect a lot of what you would probably think is lame.
Maybe.
Like, I remember when I was like 13, 14, and there would be a lot of shit on wrestling that was really lame material.
Right. Let's say, didn't you... What's that show? Today's Special. You love Today's Special. Could you watch Today's Special today and laugh at the same jokes and react the same way that you did back then?
That really wasn't a comedy way.
Okay, but...
That was a learning experience, Today's Special.
Would you react?
Well, I'm also talking a distinct difference here between 6 and 13. That's a big gap.
Uh-huh. And who's he cutting it for? Who's he talking to?
Well, that's a great question. 6-year-olds were not watching Raw in... insane number. Right. 6-year-olds are not watching today's product in a giant amount. As much as we love to say that this is a show aimed for children, they are not hitting children as their prime audience. The prime audience that is watching Raw every Monday night are much older than you and I.
Yeah.
So always keep that in mind as well. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, this was also notable that John Cena, his promo was backstage and not in the ring. Because I think he would have this was at a time when this guy was getting booed all the time, unless he was in there with Edge. Mm. So could have been a very hostile reaction to him in Chicago. Then there was a video package on Lashley and Vince appearing on SmackDown and ECW. Vince trying to buy off Lashley and leading to Vince slapping Lashley and then Lashley squeezing Vince McMahon's hand. It was very clear this was the main event of WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
You certainly got... I mean, that was the focus on this show.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that we didn't actually get Donald Trump on this?
Yeah, he had made his appearances already, but yeah, the go-home show, they did not have him on. They did do a press conference that they plugged here a few days after this, which featured Donald Trump slapping Vince McMahon to try and get all the last-minute media attention. Vince comes out for his match with Lashley. There's a barbershop set up at the entranceway. And Vince is out with his jeans, but a sweatshirt as well.
Jeans and sweatshirt.
And a sweatshirt. He was not showing off anything.
Maybe it was an off day.
Maybe. He wasn't peaking for March 26th. Then they showed a video of them cutting off Eugene's hair the week prior, and shaving Eugene bald.
What was the line?
Well, what's the line? Oh, no. That's later. Oh, that later. Oh, that's later. Okay, yeah, that's later. This was just the video of them cutting it. So Bobby Lashley is out, and it was all systems go on Bobby Lashley to be their big star in 2007. He had become ECW champion that prior December, and there was also a sign in the front row acknowledging Bad News Allen, who had just passed away before this. So that was the only sign of this on the show, of his passing. Vince gets on the microphone and says he will not embarrass Lashley with his physical superiority or intellectual support.
Huh?
He was supposed to say superiority, but he screwed up the word and said intellectual support.
He auto-corrected.
Yes. So I thought that was funny. And he's going to pin Lashley 1-2-3, he promises. And then Vince bails to the floor, and he brings out Lance, Cade, and Trevor Murdoch. So these were authorized run-ins, and therefore they were not privy to any fines or suspensions that Coachman had stated off the top.
Oh, okay, that's what he meant.
So they start fighting Lashley. He fights them off. Then Chris Masters runs in. And Lashley, who is the first one they have credited with breaking the master lock on TV, he's fought off. Johnny Nitro comes in. Essentially, all these guys who are like Kenny Dykstra, very upset they are not part of WrestleMania. And then there's a running power slam to Nitro as he clears the ring. And then out comes Umanga with Armando. And they start fighting Lashley. And Vince hits a low blow from behind. And then Umaga follows with a Samoan drop. And Vince pins Lashley. Now, apparently, in watching this, I believe Lashley was supposed to kick out of this and didn't. And then they went back, and Umaga splashed him, hit a running hip attack twice, and then hit the Samoan spike, and Vince pinned him a second time, which seemed really weird. And I'm pretty sure the way it was to be was that Lashley
kicked
out the first time, and they had to kill him in order to do this. So by not doing it, Vince beat him twice.
Yeah.
That's where you call maybe the audible and don't do the second pinfall.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of like the segment. I thought there was great heat for it, but the only unnecessary part I felt was...
The double pin?
Even one pin I felt like wasn't necessary. But, I mean, I think you could justify it a lot more had he kicked out that first time and then gone through all that other stuff.
So, JR called Vince Mr. McMadman to end the segment. And then Vince is backstage, and he is interviewed by Todd Grisham. And Grisham calls this controversial. And Vince says he guaranteed he would pin Lashley, and Umaga will do it this Sunday and shave Donald Trump's head. And then he brings in Eugene, who is dressed up as Donald Trump with a wig. And we go to the clip of Vince McMahon addressing the fake Donald Trump.
Donald. Mr. Trump. Come on in here. Now, if anybody believes that Donald Trump is going to shave my head bald at WrestleMania, then clinically speaking, they're mentally retarded.
Boy, way. 2007 WWE programming. How this clip has not found its way into any news outlets of Vince McMahon calling Donald Trump.
I mean, Donald Trump is probably very glad he didn't show up to this episode of Raw, because he probably would have been in this skit.
Vince would have... This is amazing that, like, 2007, this was still a pretty... pretty taboo word to be throwing out there. I mean,
sure.
I mean, I know there was a time
when did he say the N-word?
2005.
Oh, okay. Oh, so we've moved on. We've grown a lot. Since,
yes. What a run he's had. I mean, even up until recently, dropping, saying fuck on television a couple of weeks back, yeah. Middle fingers to the crowd.
He's a very interesting man who can probably get away with a lot.
I assume so.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's Vince McMahon. That's our final sell for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It wasn't it years later, I mean, when a lot of criticism was made about the Eugene character when Linda was running, that they tried to position it as he was presented as a strong character and to triumph over bullies. And I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, you have clips like this, yeah. You have clips of, you know, the paint being thrown on him. And I mean, they did some pretty awful things to that Eugene character. Mr. Kennedy and Randy Orton. What a team. Do you remember the story involving these two where Orton had come back from a shoulder injury in 2009, and Kennedy suplexed him on the bad shoulder, and you can see this clip, and Randy Orton is just furious in the ring with Kennedy. So to see these two teaming together was funny. Taking on the Hardys, Jeff and Matt, They got the heat on Jeff early, head scissors to Kennedy out of the corner, and Jeff gets thrown to the floor. He came back with the whisper in the wind to Kennedy, tagged in Matt, who hit a bulldog clothesline combo to Kennedy and Orton, hit them with side effects, and then Kennedy stops the twist of fate that was about to be hit to Randy Orton. And then the twist of fate gets blocked as Kennedy shoves Matt into an RKO, and Orton pins Matt in 427.
Yeah, good match. I thought Matt really stood out here. Yeah, not much to say.
That was just
TV
quick match. Tag match involving these four individuals. And then we got the ad with the divas all grown up as we got these kids playing the various divas that stated, "Don't put labels on us." And then they gave themselves labels. Confident, strong, and the natural evolution of those names. Diva.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit weird promoting, like, the Playboy match with little kids.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Very weird when we had some of these women earlier in the night showing with their Playboy cover photos.
Yeah.
When we were young, it was easy to underestimate us, write us off, to label us. Daddy's little girl, prima donna, brat. But now, grown up. Keep your labels. We know what we are. Talented. Confident. Strong. Diva.
Then we had the final announcement for the class of 2007 for the WWE Hall of Fame, and it is Jim Ross being inducted, and this was the Hall of Fame package of all Hall of Fame packages. I mean, they had everybody speak about Jim Ross. Steve Austin, The Rock, Jerry Lawler, Shawn Michaels, Mick Foley, Ric Flair, JBL, Farouk, Chris Benoit, Dusty Rhodes, Michael Cole, all calling Ross the biggest voice, the always calling the main event match. Hunter stating there is no one else he wants calling his match. They had Vince McMahon in here. They had John Cena, Ric Flair saying that a lot of people are good, but few people are great. And as much as the video package was really great, to me, I always remember the reaction in the Allstate Arena. They gave him a several-minute-long standing ovation. I mean, this was a really memorable moment on this Raw.
So I guess they went to break with the ovation continuing, because we only got to see a brief portion of that standing ovation after this video.
I'm not quite sure how it went.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said they gave him a standing ovation for several minutes.
Yeah, well, this was... They showed that.
I didn't feel like it was that long.
Oh, it was a couple minutes.
Really?
He was standing for a little bit there.
It felt like it was just, like, maybe a minute.
Well, what'd you think of the video package?
Great. Excellent. I mean, a man with, you know, he's definitely more than deserving. I mean, I don't think it was probably very difficult to come up with a great highlight package of so many great calls that this man's had.
Mm-hmm. And we'll actually hear, this is a really quick clip of Jim Ross describing the reaction he received that night and how this moment actually impacted his immediate future with the WWE. The Hall of Fame, a very big part of the annual weekend activities. And I want to go back to a date, March the 26th of 2007. To me, it was one of the more memorable segments in Raw history. It was the announcement on the go-home show going into WrestleMania 23 of the last inductee into that year's class. And it was you, Jim Ross, at the Allstate Arena in Chicago. And the reaction to that video, Jim, is one that I will forever remember. In terms of highlights, I have to imagine that is pretty high up there in your career, and I'm certain unexpected at the time, that level of reception you received that night in Chicago.
Well, it was heartwarming. It was certainly, some may be thinking I'm going to say that my most memorable moment was McMahon's portrayal of Dr. Heine, but that would be wrong. It was Chicago. And the really interesting backstory about that, Todd Grisham told me this story months and months, maybe a year later, because I got assigned to be a Grisham sidekick on SmackDown, if some remember.
Yes.
And enjoyed working with Todd, by the way, too. But on one of our trips, he told me, said, you know, he was told by Kevin Dunn that in the fall, the fall of 2007, that he was going to be the new voice of Monday Night Raw. And so the plan was for WWE to take me off TV, or at least off Raw, and maybe off all television, I don't know. I never had that conversation with him. But he was told about it and said, no, don't say anything about it right now. You know, we'll get with JR and all that. But when I went to, when they, that moment you talked about in Chicago, it was, I think it shocked the hierarchy that people had actually made an investment in the chubby southern guy with Bell's palsy, and they cared about me. And so that whole thing was rethought, and I stayed on TV. And then eventually, in 2008, I think it was, I got quote unquote drafted to SmackDown, which was a lie. It was told me the night before it was not going to happen. And of course, you know, the way that things work in corporate world is that they can tell you one thing today, and then they can change their mind is the key thing. Well, we were going to do that, but we changed our mind. So why do we even give our word to people if we're not going to keep it? I don't understand that. That's not how I do business. But nonetheless, that was a heartwarming moment. I'll always owe the fans of Chicago an enormous debt that I'll never be able to repay, because it was, I cried. My family cried. It was, my friends were moved. It was amazing. And I wanted to sit down because I didn't want to hold up the show. And Lawler was being told in his headset, tell JR to stand up. So Lawler kept pushing me up and giving me the office's eyes, you know, to, you know, enjoy this. And so it was an amazing moment, and I'll never forget it. And one of the great things about, you know, YouTube and the WWE Network and all these other allies or avenues that we can utilize to get vintage stuff is the fact that somebody almost every week sees that for the first time, and that they are following me on social media, whether it be on Twitter or Facebook or hit my website with the Q&A's, whatever it may be. And they bring it up because it was moving to them too. So I'm glad you brought that up, because anytime I tell stories about that, I feel better, because it was one of the most rewarding nights, heartfelt rewarding nights in my entire life.
So there you have it. The plan was to get Ross out of the seat on Raw, and Todd Grisham would have become the new voice of Raw. And this reaction in Chicago likely changed things. And then, of course, a year later was when we got the infamous draft, where Ross was unknowingly drafted to SmackDown.
How awful. Terrible.
So this was one of those really great moments on Raw, and the only way you follow something that impressive is the great Khali coming out, which Jerry Lawler said, well, there's a buzz killer. As Khali came out, Jim Ross, I mean... It's one thing when he drops this in the midst of a match where you can see it playing out. He tees up Khali and Kane for this Sunday. This will be a bowling shoe ugly fist fight. Uh-huh. I mean, this has to be a record for that many days out telegraphing. This match is going to suck. I hope it's short.
I mean, his own credibility was on the line. You know, you can only...
I think that typically, though, it would be... He'd drop it during the match when I think you kind of have to be honest with the audience. I mean, this guy was... He was doubling down. He knew exactly what we were getting. And he was saying what everyone thought. I mean, this is the great Khali and Kane at WrestleMania.
The chances of this being a good wrestling match were very slim.
I would say about impossible. And then of all matches to get Khali ready, it was the great Khali against Ric Flair, who was not booked at WrestleMania. Think about how big he'd be a part of next year's WrestleMania. And here he was. He ended up being on the pre-show. He got placed on there. But what an interesting time.
Yeah.
So there was a back body drop to Flair. Khali went for a tree slam onto the steps on the floor when Carlito ran down and attacked Khali for the DQ. 59 seconds this one went. And then Khali laid out Carlito with a tree slam. And Kane comes out with a giant hook attached to a chain as he has morphed into Jacob Goodnight. This was his primary weapon. Right. And Kane attacks Khali. The crowd did respond to this, and Khali retreated.
Crowd, actually, by this point, I was just starting to think that this was a hot crowd instead of the show being amazing, because they were responding to everything.
The crowd boosted a lot of this significantly. Yeah. And, of course, the Carlito and Flair team had come out of that incredible promo that Flair had cut. Do you recall the backstage one?
See you, Rick.
See you, Rick.
Hey, where are you going?
I'm going to me. I'm told we're going out.
You're going out? Hey, didn't you lose your match tonight?
Yeah, but, you know, they cheat or something. It's cool.
It's cool? You realize there's a triple threat main event match going on tonight, live on Raw, to see who goes to WrestleMania? You're telling me it's cool, you're leaving? You're not going to stay and watch the show?
Carlito's not in the main event, so what do I care?
Have you ever stopped to think that there's a reason why guys like you, and I'm talking about guys like you, are not in the main event? That's right. Why you're not in the main event is because maybe you're a lazy, underachieving son of a bitch. Lucky to be walking the hall of this building. Lucky to be on the Raw roster. Lucky to be here at all. You're really pissing me off right now.
What was your problem?
My problem, I'll tell you what my problem is. Guys like you, that have no passion, no guts. You want all the money, you want all the glory, you want to fly first class. You want to walk around with someone like her? You don't deserve it. You haven't worked for it. You haven't bled, sweat, and paid the price to be here. That's what's driving me crazy. I'm walking this hall trying to figure out why guys like you are taking my spot. Yeah, guys like you are taking my spot. I've been here forever. And I'm going to work my ass off to stay here. McMahon told me today, if I want to stay, I got to prove it to him. You want to stay, you got to prove it to yourself. It's not cool, it's pathetic. It's pathetic! I'm walking around trying to figure out what my name is, and you're leaving before the main event? Yeah, me! Sometimes I walk around trying to figure out who I am, and the whole world knows who I am. Except me sometimes. And you're leaving?
I mean, this was one of the great Ric Flair promos, at least of his WWE tenure, where he's leaving the arena. Or, sorry, Carlito is leaving the arena with Torrey and basically says, hey, I'm taking off. See you later, Rick. And Rick is like, there's a championship match tonight, and you're leaving? And he cuts this promo about how he's questioning if he's still got it, and young punks like you are taking off before the show is over, and pretty much just this scathing promo on Carlito. A very, very entertaining promo. Then we had, oh, we got Saliva for our theme music next week for WrestleMania 23. And then they showed a trailer for The Condemned, starring Steve Austin as Jack Conrad, with the slogan, 10 will fight, 9 will die, you get to watch.
Okay.
Did you ever watch The Condemned?
I thought we reviewed it.
No, we didn't.
No. No, I haven't seen it.
No, so we did not, in fact, watch these 9 die and 10 fight. They ran through the WrestleMania card, and then Shawn Michaels, with his tan, joined us.
Very tan. Shawn.
Oh, my God. This guy almost couldn't be seen with the sign behind them. Holy Christ. This guy was every ounce of orange you could imagine. I mean, he was pretty much sponsored by Crayola here. He ran through all these people that thought they were going to be the next great star. He said he's seen every self-proclaimed greatest in-ring performer, legend, icon, New York Times best-selling author, Oscar nominee, Grammy Award-winning rock star and rap star. I kind of lost who he was even trying to reference here, like Grammy Award winners and stuff. Like, I mean, New York Times best-selling author, okay. I think these were all veiled comments.
Who are the Grammys?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think anyone qualifies in WWE history with a Grammy Award. But
I'm sure
I think these were all subtle shots of, you know, Bret Hart, The Rock, Mick Foley. I mean, all of these guys have come and gone, and here he is still standing. And he said they failed and left, and Michaels is still here.
Hasn't Jimmy Hart won
a Grammy?
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. No Grammy for Jimmy Hart or the Gentrys. And he winks and tells Cena that he has his back tonight, as they will be teaming up. And the build-up for John Cena and Shawn Michaels was done really well. I remember this WrestleMania build very well, that you knew that this super kick was coming, you just didn't know when, and they were building it and building it and building it. And it was done very well. The two had won the tag titles together, and you knew that Cena couldn't trust Michaels, but you never knew when the hit was coming. And then we got, what a Rolodex here that they exercise, getting a who's who of the mainstream world to comment on Donald Trump and Vince McMahon. In order, we heard from Bow Wow, Ed Asner, Sonny from POD, Payable on Death, Richard Karn from Family Feud and Home Improvement, Kurt Busch, Tichina Arnold from Everybody Hates Chris.
They got her? No way.
Laura Prepon from That 70s Show.
Yeah.
Oscar Award winners, 3-6 Mafia.
There you go, okay.
And William Shatner.
Ah.
Holy shit. This was like a fucking cast of the next Celebrity Apprentice.
Well, I mean, a lot of these people had ties. I mean, Shatner was to induct Lawler at the Hall of Fame. And 3-6 Mafia didn't Mark Henry already debut his
Yes,
theme?
Yes.
So they Bow Wow, I mean.
Well, POD was doing Rey Mysterio's theme.
Ah, yes. Richard Karn. Didn't they have a WWE Family Feud?
They did, but not with Richard Karn.
They probably just like went on to some red carpet.
I don't know how many strings needed to be pulled to secure Richard Karn on a red carpet. I think they just went to some event and just anyone you recognize or don't recognize, get them their prediction on Trump and McMahon. I want to know how many at this whatever function said no to this request. I am not talking about this in any kind of serious tone. So that took us to our main event on the Go Home Edition for WrestleMania. John Cena.
I thought of a Grammy Award winner from the WWE. The Usos.
That's true. The Young Usos. Yeah, you're right. They hadn't come, though, so they couldn't have gone yet. Shawn Michaels couldn't be upset at them yet. John Cena and Shawn Michaels, who are the World Tag Team Champions at this point, taking on World Champion Batista and The Undertaker. And there were tons of boos for John Cena as he attacked The Undertaker. Taker hit him with snake eyes, and then Cena ducked a boot. The FU got blocked, and Taker went for a choke slam and got stopped by Michaels. Taker and Batista then send them to the floor, and they have a stare down, and they tease going at it until Cena runs in and goes after Taker to more boos. Taker gets sent into the steps twice by Michaels, and then there's a flying clothesline back into the ring delivered to Cena, and then Batista blind tags himself in. All four get in. Spinebuster is delivered to Cena. Taker then hits a press slam to Michaels, but then tosses him at his partner Batista, and Taker just takes off. And then Michaels hits a top rope elbow, and Cena and Michaels come together for a double five-knuckle shuffle. There were 10 knuckles to be shuffled onto Batista's face, and clearly that was the last moment of unity, because then Michaels, out of nowhere, hit Cena with the sweet chin music, and the place erupted at the Allstate Arena. Huge pop. Jim Ross sells it big, and Batista just rolls over, recovering from the 10-knuckle shuffle, and pins John Cena at 6:39. And Michaels lays over top of Cena. He does the "you can't see me," and then hits a crotch chop on top of Cena. And then we took a commercial break for whatever reason, and we came back to replay the finish, and that is how things ended.
The timing seems a little off. It felt like they were probably short one commercial break or something and had to come back with the nothing but replays. But I thought the closing segment turned out really well.
Yeah, this was much more angle-focused. I mean, the match was just whatever, but it was the personalities involved here, and you know, these are the two title matches going into WrestleMania. I will say that I much prefer just one world title match at WrestleMania. There were so many years where we had the double title match scenario. I like it much more now, the fact they consolidated it. But, I mean, this one really, I think you have to look at the context of how they had built up this Michaels Cena thing. That Sweet Chin Music had been teased for weeks on end. So when they finally delivered it, it was the culmination of a long build. And they did a very good job. I thought this whole WrestleMania, they built it very well. The hair versus hair match was built up. It had a lot of interest. And I'll say of the matches going in, I think a lot of people were kind of not really feeling Batista the Undertaker, and they surprised a lot of people at WrestleMania that we'll talk about next week. But did this show do a good job, Wei, in what it was setting out to do?
I thought so. Certainly, you know, probably all the main major angles got time. It was all the setup I really needed to watch before next week.
Yeah, as we said earlier, I mean, it laid out pretty much all the key matches. Yeah. Everyone was represented with the exception of the eight-man tag for ECW, Benoit MVP. Yeah. Pretty much everything else was focused on.
And I think really the perfect crowd to do a go-home show in front of in Chicago here.
Absolutely. So those were our thoughts on the March 26, 2007 episode of Raw from Chicago. Next week, we will have a complete review of WrestleMania 23, one of the most successful WrestleManias in history, with a celebrity angle that was certainly a key one. And we'll read some of your feedback now from the Law Message Board. We start off with Matt in suburban Detroit. Just looking at the Raw go-home show during the brand split, never feels truly whole. It's a typical Raw with more talking than physicality. There was some decent build for Lashley and Umaga and Money in the Bank, which SmackDown did better, but it made WrestleMania feel like a two-match show. Hopefully the next brand split Mania, you discuss Raw and SmackDown's go-home. Well, I don't think we missed a whole lot on SmackDown, to be quite honest.
We got a Peter from Toronto. What I take away from the Raw and the build-up to WrestleMania 23 that stood out the most to me was the Money in the Bank competitors. For all the work Edge did in 2006, I really wish he was rewarded with a singles match against someone. Even if they had rated RKO versus the Hardys in a tag match for the World Tag Titles, that would have suited all four men much, much better. The tag titles getting lost in the Cena-Michaels feud was disappointing. At least the main event finally had a payoff with Michaels giving the super kick to Cena. The rest of the build to WrestleMania 23 was mostly forgettable to me at this time. On a side note, I'm not sure if this was Kofi's debut, but looking up the dark matches on this night, we had Kofi defeating Trevor Murdoch, so that was kind of neat.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a dark match or if they taped it, because he wasn't brought up until later in the year, I think, on ECW. So anyway, yeah, he was there was a lot of interest in Kofi Kingston. He was getting a lot of praise in developmental at the time, because he was down. Well, they had a slew of guys down in Deep South and OVW at this point, or FCW. Imran from Huddersfield, England. First off, I think you guys reached a peak in terms of quality review away preamble material last week. I was stuck in traffic listening to you guys and couldn't stop laughing, which in turn amused the woman in the car next to me. On to Raw, and this was a good go-home for WrestleMania, I thought. Pretty much everything had a purpose and drummed up excitement in some way, particularly for the two main events and the McMahon-Trump match, which is exactly what this show should be doing. The highlights for me were the reaction to CM Punk, Edge doing a great job of hyping up Money in the Bank, Umaga killing Lashley, as I always enjoyed Umaga killing people, and the main event, which had a good big match feel. I always liked the chemistry between Batista and The Undertaker, so it was fun seeing them tag together and not remembering the result of the match. It was very interesting to see who would take the pin, considering this was your four main eventers for Mania. Cena was probably the best choice in the end, as he could absorb the loss being the champion. Plus, the Sweet Chin Music from HBK was executed brilliantly. Keep up the good work. I look forward to hearing your review of WrestleMania next week. So thank you, Imran, and all of you for leaving your feedback. Next week, a massive review. Way, are you ready for this WrestleMania review? This is going to be a sizable one.
I think so.
And so next week on the show, we are also we might be able to dig up some audio from the past, because this was also a WrestleMania that our own Dan Lavransky attended live at Ford Field.
Wow.
He didn't make it to the Hall of Fame, but he did make it to WrestleMania that year in Detroit. So next week, WrestleMania 23, much more easier show to watch than this particular edition of Raw. You really had to dig deep for this particular episode.
Yeah, well, we hunted it down.
That's true. And then in 2 weeks' time, we will review the Raw from the night after WrestleMania 23, which I have zero recollection of, so it'll be as if I'm watching that show for the first time.
I'm pretty sure I watched it with you guys, but...
Probably did. These were the O'Grady's days.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember... I'm pretty sure it was WrestleMania weekend that we had our practicum screening.
Oh.
So I can only imagine what our lives were like this week going into WrestleMania. Yeah. Probably wrestling was not a high priority in terms of following it.
Probably editing.
Yes.
So Rogers Communication Center.
The good old RCC.
Yeah.
With the church and state.
Yes.
All right. That is going to bring an end to Review Away. If you want to continue to send Way... happy birthday messages.
No, it's like 2 days old.
No, it's still open. It's the week.
Then you should send John some happy birthday messages.
No, it's a week. It's a week. The week expired. Yes. As of today, it's been a week.
All right.
So, at Way 0937, mm-hmm. he is always down to chat. Have you ever given any thought
to... Aren't you down to chat?
Of course.
Okay. So send John a message as well.
No, you can post them on the message board, and then we will take your questions for Ask Away.
Oh, okay.
That's the best place.
Yeah, we could do
if
that.
You actually want an answer.
Yeah, every Friday. Otherwise, John will ignore you. Yes. He won't even like your tweets.
Well, most I'm fine with, but I'm getting tired of ones of asking me, hey, when does this particular wrestling show start at? It's like, I'm not your search engine.
Yeah.
Do it anything that you can do on your own that you're asking me to take the time out to do the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not your resource companion.
John's very busy.
Well, come on. Stupid stuff like that.
Yeah. You wouldn't.
Like, imagine the thought process, Way, of me walking down to your office to ask you, what time's Raw on tonight? When I could simply type it. Like, you can literally type in questions into Google, and the answer typically comes up.
Would you try to call Don Cherry to ask when Hockey Night in Canada is on?
Like, the effort you're taking to ask me this could have been allocated towards you. Like, it's never been easier to find out information online. It's never been easier. Like,
people just want to bug you. They just want to have something.
No, they're lazy. They're lazy. It's like, oh, where am I going to go to find the start time? Entitlement, man. So you can ask me stuff, but it better be good. Or I'm just not going to respond to you. Most of you, if you don't hear from me, you've probably been muted.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's what John does to me.
Actually, I enjoy the ones where people are like, I'm sure John Pollock has muted me. And it's like, no, I actually haven't, but continue on.
You just have really dumb questions.
I never want to be any... I couldn't imagine being like some of the people in WWE... How could you even possibly use Twitter? I could never do it. I could never do it where I'm asked stuff every single day. Like, imagine you are, who would be a good name to throw out there? Dolph Ziggler.
Yep.
How many times do you think that guy is, oh, why aren't they pushing you more? How many versions of that comment must that guy get on a daily basis?
Do you think that bothers him? I mean, I'm sure...
It would bother me over.
I'm sure there's a part of him that's happy that, you know, fans think that he should be on TV more. It's a way to get feedback. But certainly, I'm sure there are guys who get more annoying questions.
Oh.
Like The Miz. I'm sure he gets some terrible messages on TV. On Twitter.
The worst.
Yeah.
Well, Way, that's going to bring an end to the show. Do you have any St. Patrick's Day plans?
No, actually. I'm probably spending it with family.
Are you going to watch Tank Abbott fight this Sunday?
That's a maybe.
I think you should watch.
I'll probably watch after the fact.
I think it'll be something to watch.
It's on Sunday?
It's on Sunday.
Okay.
At 7 o'clock.
You're doing a full review for The Law?
Oh, yeah. We're watching that whole show.
Nice.
It's going to be something else. Tank Abbott is taking on Dan Severn.
Mm.
We've got Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle in a wrestling match.
Yep.
We've got Michael Bisping against Chael Sonnen in a grappling battle.
That's awesome.
And Roy Jones Jr. is going to be having a boxing fight.
With a fan.
A fan who has had fights.
Oh.
They did make it. The commission would not allow someone just straight off of a couch to take this fight.
You're watching at TSN?
Yes. Yes, that's cool. The plan. So,
okay, maybe I'll drop by.
You're more than welcome to. That is the show coming up on Sunday, and we will discuss the You Are Fight event on The Law Sunday night at 11 Eastern. You can get all our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com, and do check out the archives section at lawradio.proboards.com. Archives of all the review-aways, Review of Raw, Law, interviews, all our different shows, What's Next, they're all up there. Japanese Audio Wrestling.
Review and Impact.
Review and Impact, still up there.
Keep it 100.
We've kept all the episodes up there.
What else?
That kind of runs the gamut there.
Yeah,
that's about
pretty
all.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you can go check all of that stuff out, and we'll be back next week reviewing WrestleMania 23 from Ford Field in Detroit.
First of all, Vince, your grapefruits are no match for my Trump Towers.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, Vince, I don't know if you've seen the latest poll. I saw the other night John Travolta. He prefers Trump. I see others prefer Trump. The poll shows 95% of the Hollywood celebrities want your head shaved, and we're going to do it, Vince. We're going to do it.
You might have some support from this audience, but 95% of them are idiots.
To me, they look like a very smart group of people.